What's the haps, dudes? I didn't mention at the time, but during the recent podcast that Irish Gavin and I recorded with you, I was stunned into a deeper silence than usual. You know the one, when people start talking about strange and weird things of which I have no understanding, things like Star Trek, was it? Yeah. What is Star Trek? I'm writing this letter to you, then reading aloud my letter, to ask you to please explain yourselves, to educate those less fortunate. Boldly yours, English Gaff.
This is the Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Episode 31 on the subject of Star Trek, the original series, featuring Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, Gav Brown, and Mark Bosco.
Hi, hello, yes, space, the final frontier, yada, yada, yada. You guys happy now? No. This is the first of our Star Trek shows, so if you listen closely, you can hear the sound of a million iPods switching off. But if you're still with us...
good for you.
Matt is here.
I am here.
Mark Bosco, who apparently lives here now, is here.
Hello.
This is his third show in a row. Didn't really plan it that way, but here we are.
Thanks for letting me sleep on your couch.
And English and Irish Gav are here, minus English Gav. So I don't know how that works, but Gav, welcome.
Live long and prosper.
See, yeah. Now I know it's you because the other one wouldn't do that. So. No, oh, we're off to a great start. So we've hinted at this for a long time. Matt and I just... will not shut up about Star Trek, and we probably won't even after this, but
don't think that this will get it out of our system.
Oh, no. But we're doing three of these to sort of kick off the whole, specific topic shows. And we figure, well, the three easiest things we can talk about are Star Trek, Star Trek, and Star Trek, so that's what we'll be doing. This one is about the original... We ended up making it the original crew rather than just the original series, because there's a lot of Captain Kirk out there.
Yeah, it's a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah, and then the next one will be Next Gen, and the next one will be Deep Space Nine, and the one that never exists,
or
the other thing.
All the Star Treks are taken care of after Deep Space Nine. There's nothing else to talk about.
You know how I wrap up the show by saying we're going to stop talking now? That would be the one about Voyager and Enterprise. So...
You should do one about Voyager and Enterprise, but just immediately when you introduce it, just say we're going to stop talking.
Right, exactly.
Hi, hello, yes. Star Trek Voyager, Star Trek Enterprise, we're going to stop talking now.
gotta use that door sound effect there, too. That's essential. and, of course, a lot of us, the four of us included, have a renewed love for that original crew, thanks to... the much maligned by me fake Star Trek. And
once Star Trek,
once again, for the record, I was wrong. The marketing for that movie was terrible. I thought it was going to be what it wasn't, and I'm wrong, and it was a great movie.
It continues to be terrible, too. Like, you know, read the back of that box, like, added scenes with Kirk, Spock, and more Green Girls.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, great. Now Bob's off in his own little world there.
Please him.
What? I didn't mean to turn him on.
All this accidental on-turning. of course, you know, the movie was a big hit and also quite good. And I've watched it, I don't know, no kidding, probably 10 times since it's come out on DVD already.
In one day at one point.
Yeah, there was one day where I actually had it on and it ended and it went back to the menu and I just hit play again. It's just so great. And I only recently found out that it was written by the guys who wrote the first Transformers movies, and I cannot...
Yeah, that's a tough one, eh?
I can't reconcile those in my brain at all. I don't get it.
Huh. I wish I didn't know that.
You know what that means? Upcoming crossover!
No!
Now, see, if it was the real Transformers and not those hideous piles, I might be excited, but, you know.
That'd be awesome. Get the animated crew in there.
Yeah, sure. No, probably not. I liked that, like, at the title, and I'm starting to, like, no, that would suck. No, we're not doing that.
There's no way.
No. But because the movie was so great and it did sort of renew our interest in that original crew, we've all kind of gone back and looked at other things. I know Gavin, Bob, you both have been looking at the Blu-ray, like the enhanced version of the series.
Yeah, that certainly hasn't hurt that those have been coming out lately too. So it's
been kind of
plowing through those. Oh my God, they look awesome. Yeah. The cleanup on the, you know, just the actual stuff they shot just looks great. And the effects, I have to say, like, at first I was a little leery. It's like, well, okay, they're going to, you know, do all new effects and kind of maybe they're going to change things, but they've actually been really respectful of it. They've only, kind of changed things very subtly in the service of the story and not like just gone all out and crazy and tried to make things look new and better.
Yeah, there's no like Bantha walking by in the background.
No. It's a lot of like cleanup and like they'll do subtle things in scenes where it's like if they have a wide shot, maybe they'll have like some people in the background or their ship flying by or something to kind of, you know, make the scene feel a little bit more alive. But they, you know,
if you're still really anal, you can still watch the original episode.
Yeah, they include both versions on the disc. That's good.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. But I've been really impressed with the new effects. I just watch them with the new effects.
And it's not just the space effects, you know, because, I mean, Amok Time, it redid parts of Vulcan as well.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's a solid episode, and every now and then you see kind of the papier-mâché background, and you're like, oh, I can imagine this being good, but, oh. So, yeah, if they clean that up a little, it's probably fantastic.
Well, more of the long shots that they...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, just kind of the establishing shots. They did a little bit more with it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. And we should remind people if they don't remember, Bob is a video professional. So, I mean, you're watching this really sort of from a like a professional standpoint. You really have high standards when it comes to, you know, people cleaning up film and that sort of thing. And so for you to say that you think it looks good, it's really – I mean, I'm not
–
I
kind of have to. I mean, I'm not. Right. It's not like I go into it looking to pick it apart, but I just, you know, I'm used to looking at video all day.
No, and kind of... I give you so much of a hard time for this most of the time, and I'm really not this time. All I'm saying is for you to say that is a big deal because you spend, you know, you get paid to make crap look good. So,
yeah. No, they
did
a
really good
job.
Right. But then, Gav, you just from a fan standpoint, from a someone who loves Star Trek, you are also finding that that they've done a particularly good job of, you know.
Yeah, I have been enjoying, you know, even watching just the shots of the spaceships, you know, they've done up or the planet place or the, you know, even the planets.
Right.
They've been making them better rather as opposed to just a beach ball in the sky.
Right.
Yeah, they look a little bit more realistic.
But there's not a big, like, you know, like Matt says, not a George Lucas-ing, you know, let's make it all better.
Like, you know.
Oh, no, they haven't been changing the story or anything. It's just been...
Well, not even that.
Fucking sticking Hayden Christensen in the background. I was here all along, guys.
Right, and you know, I don't want to get into all that, but that doesn't bother me. But I understand why it bothers some people. I understand why it bothers some people. But no, looking at, like, iTunes has the enhanced ones available, and I've looked at the trailers on there, and I can see, for instance, Khan's ship looks the same. Like, the design is the same. Mm-hmm. But now you can see it in 3D and you can get it from more than one angle and it just, you can see more details.
That's the only one I saw, like, that I've seen of the redone ones. They played it before, I went to a screening of, Wrath of Khan and they played it beforehand.
Oh, nice.
And it looked awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they were saying, part of the original reason they started redoing those was that it was just when they took it into HD, just the old effects just really didn't hold up, mainly because, I mean, not really because of the models or anything, but just because the technology then to do the effects, it went through so many duplications of film.
Copy of a copy, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. By the time I got to the broadcast, it was so soft and kind of grungy looking that it just didn't hold up.
Yeah, and I would imagine jumping from that crisp, restored footage on the bridge to, you know, a murky, you know, ship just would really be very jarring. So
yeah, I mean, I've looked at the original effects on the Blu-ray as well, and they've actually done a good job cleaning those up as well. But it's, you know, it's certainly not as sharp as the new renders.
Right. Well, it's good to hear that they're being respectful. And I remember when there was a Deep Space Nine episode, you guys all know it, the listeners may not, where they go back to the original Tribble episode and they sort of interact with the original crew. And
fuck, that was a good episode.
I was so great. And it was,
that's on the Tribble disc too.
As well it should
Is
be.
It?
They have, we should say now that we're in the actual show, I should mention in the Blu-ray in season two, there is an entire disc dedicated to Tribbles.
Right? Really?
It has the original episode. It has the original episode with all the crap of like interviews and people popping up and talking over it. And then it has the sequel episode from the animated series called More Tribbles, More Troubles.
More Tribbles, More Troubles.
Mm-hmm. And then it has the DS9 episode where they go back and interact with the original cast.
And those are great episodes to watch side by side because you can really see how clever the writing was and how well they integrated, their story without changing anything. But I remember watching that back in 96 or 97 or whatever it was and seeing the original Enterprise, not the movie version of it, but the straight up, like classic NCC-1701 in like 3D shots. And they weren't elaborate, flashy things. It was just the camera had more than one direction to move. They could show you the whole ship and they could do these sweeping, zooms and pans. And it was like, oh my God, that ship has never looked so good. And even the K-7 space station, the little like toy top.
Yeah, yeah.
Where most of the action of that episode takes place. It's a shitty design. It's just it's like an octagon or something. But even in 3D, it was like, oh my, that looks good. That looks like a place I would like to see more things happen on TV. It was nice.
Over there.
Yeah. And I remember that was, 10, 12, 13 years ago now.
Yeah.
And even that looked great. So I can imagine using even better technology now, taking those same ideas and just making them more, I hate to use the word, but dynamic, so you can zoom around a thing.
Yeah.
Right. Now, there's definitely a lot of that where they've just kind of done little subtle things, little subtle moves.
Wait, because really they had like three stock shots of the external of the Enterprise, and now you can really do a lot more with it. So,
right.
Now, how would you guys feel when they're doing the redone episodes? How would you feel about with Trouble with Tribbles when they did the actual episode? They actually put like Sisko and them in the background.
That might not be bad, actually.
They never show up in the actual episode, but all those scenes that they're walking around in DS9, they're in the Trouble with Tribbles.
Yeah, just put them in the hallway. That would
be fucking awesome.
That wouldn't be bad at all, actually. Yeah.
You should do it just because it would annoy so many people.
Yeah, that's the other reason.
And that in a nutshell is why I chose you two specifically for this show, and the other people that I chose for the other Star Trek shows, because liking it isn't enough. You also can't take it so seriously that, because, I know there are still people out there who hate the new movie, and not because of it was good or bad, but because of all the continuity issues.
Because I was reading IMDb earlier on with, for the new Star Trek, and it was just so, there was just so many people saying, why do these writers write this new Star Trek? They say they like it, but it's just they just don't like it at all. They're not taking it seriously.
I don't understand why they couldn't get Shatner back. He said he'd do it.
Oh, God.
He could play young Kirk. They just paint his toupee.
See, and the thing is, I
young Kirk, they could just use CGI to make it play.
The thing is, I know and love Star Trek like a woman. I really, I do. There's no other way to say that. And thankfully, Amanda's not jealous about that.
She already knows your heart belongs to Arrested Development.
Well, I don't know that I could choose, actually. But anyway, watching that movie, there was just so many little moments, so many little things that they got right. And so many, like I said, Gav and I both, when we talked for the first time after the movie, we both at the same time were just like, they got the apple, they got the apple. And like, everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And we actually explained this in a previous podcast, but for those of you who missed that, apparently not everyone listens to every word we say. I know. Yeah, I know.
I'm shocked.
There's a bit in Wrath of Khan where Kirk is talking about how he doesn't like to lose and he bites into that apple. It's kind of a dramatic moment. And in the new movie where he does the Kobayashi Maru thing, which they talk about in Star Trek II, he does his thing and he's got the triumphant moment and he bites into the apple. And it's just a nice little like, hey, yeah, Kirk, the apple. I get it. It was a nice little nod. It was a nice little detail that three people would get. And that's me, Gav, and the guy who wrote it. So
pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I got it.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, the apple,
Wrath of
really?
It's one of my favorite movies.
Well, yeah, it's a great movie, but that's kind of a strange detail, Fair enough. Anyway.
I watched Wrath of Khan right before I watched Star Trek, and I didn't catch that.
That actually surprises me because you tried to not give the illusion of this, but you are one of those detail nerds, believe it or not.
Yeah, I know.
You just don't care. Like, you don't get mad about it, but you still notice.
I was just yelling about The Simpsons last night.
So, like,
well, we can't.
That stuff does hang up on
We can't
that.
Talk about that, so. But no, I was actually watching, you know, as I say, watched the new movie quite a bit. And a little detail that there's no reason they should have gotten it wrong, and they didn't, but it still made me so happy, was young Spock gets in a fight, and afterwards, you know, as a Vulcan boy fight, as we've discussed, in the learning pit.
In the Vulcan boy fight pits.
Right. Well, they're learning pits initially, and then they become the fighting pits after school is over with. So.
Yes.
They kind of convert. But there's a bit right after that where he's kind of being admonished by his father, Sarek. And he's got a little spot of blood on his lip where he got hit, and it's green.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's just like, yes, green blood, exactly. Because they could.
That's a really basic thing for Star Trek. You would think they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Well, that does come up a lot. Yeah, green blooded.
Yeah, but what color?
Son of a bitch.
What color? what color blood do Klingons have then? Tell me that.
Red.
It's like mauve or purple, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. See, in Star Trek VI, they had that sort of Pepto-Bismol-y kind of, you know, pink blood. And then in every other shot where Worf in Next Gen gets hurt, it's red. So, I mean, it's easy to get that wrong because, oh, no, he's bleeding. He looks injured. It's fine.
Well, I mean, if you really want to get a bug up your ass, it's like, oh, well, how many ridges do Klingons have?
Well, there's that also.
None at all sometimes.
But there is a lot of tie back from, I mean, like the learning pit thing. I mean, not necessarily the learning pit itself, but I just watched Journey to Babel the other night. And, I mean, you know, Spock's mom is talking to him about, you know, when the Vulcan boys used to tease you as a kid because you weren't completely Vulcan. I think it was interesting seeing that again after seeing the new Star Trek movie and kind of seeing the ties back to what they had already talked about.
Yeah, and they did reference very specific things, and there was a lot of – and for me, it's hard to separate because I've read a lot of the books for the original series. I've read some comics. I've read, like, a lot of stuff that may not be official canon, but it's still – kind of ingrained.
And it just sort of blends together in your head.
Yeah, and in my mind, he was always teased as a kid, and I didn't remember that specific line. That's a great pull. But but overall, I had it in my brain that, Vulcans were racist jerks, and, you know.
Yeah.
I love that bit where he's in front of the guy at the academy, and he's like, well, you did particularly well considering your handicap. What do you mean my handicap? Well, you know, you're one of the mixed race kids.
Overcame your mother.
Yeah.
No, in that way.
I'd just like to speak on behalf of the council and say, ew.
Well, hey, that's the incest covered then, right? I've forgotten what I was going to say now. I'm all distracted by incest.
What? Incest?
I love the fact
books,
that
you loved incest, yes.
Yes, I love incest so much. I love the fact that Sarek, Spock's father, has space jungle fever. That he's got a thing for human women because, you know, he's got the one, Spock's mother, obviously. But then when you see him again in Next Gen, he's got another one. It's like, obviously, he's got a type. Like, obviously, that's just what he goes for. And I imagine in the new continuity, now that there are a few Vulcans left, he's almost certainly going to turn up with some young, you know, human woman. And that really amuses me.
Listen.
Well, you know, he is the
on far.
He is the Earth ambassador, right? So, you know, it's only logical.
But it's
that's what he said.
That's what he tells himself at night.
Yeah, it's logical. It's logical. It's logical. God, it's so hot. Logical. It's logical. And naughty, but logical. Logical. So going back through the old series, I mean, this is a really strange thing about me. I have read, and this is super nerd territory here. I know it. Episode guides, chronologies, all that stuff, because I'm really into this thing. But I'd never actually seen that many episodes. Like, I know them by title. I know all the characters. I know all the stuff. But when it came down to it, up until a few months ago, I had seen maybe 5 episodes of the original series.
Really?
I could kick ass in Star Trek-based trivia, but I just never watched it.
Yeah, I was the same thing. I watched a whole bunch more episodes when I was a kid, but, like, I knew them all from reading, like, the episode guide.
Right.
Well, that's the one where this and this happens.
Right.
But I never saw it.
And someone will quote it to you and you'll be like, what's that from? Well, you haven't seen it? Weird. Yeah.
I think when I was a kid, I mean, like, I you know, was in reruns all the time, and sure. my parents watched it, and I watched a ton of them, and I kind of figured I'd watched all of them at some point. And I never really got into like the whole, you know, really episode guide kind of side of things, but I just kind of assumed that I had watched all of them. And watching
that shit
these
fascinated me when I was a
kid. It's still, yeah.
It's pretty interesting watching these again now. It's like, it's either I'm coming up and saying like, I'm not sure if I've actually seen this one.
Yeah.
Or, you know, at the end of it, it's usually, wow, that's a lot better than I remembered it being.
Right.
<You know? laughs> I just kind of like, I had the vague story in my head, but you know, the writing is actually really good on a lot of these.
Yeah. It surprises me. There's not a ton of continuity. And again, none of us are really guys that, you know, would not like an episode because they didn't dot an I or something, you know, but
yeah.
But there are certain episodes where it's like, wow, really? James R. Kirk? Like, come on.
On the tombstone.
Right, right. There's a
That's
lot.
It. I'm never watching this again.
Yeah.
I'm out.
They said that in the they had like the kind of commentary with that episode, and they were like, we were really torn whether to go back and fix the tombstone to say James T. Kirk.
Well, and of course the sort of Marvel no prize explanation for that I've heard is that was created by what's his name? Gary? Was it Gary?
Yeah, Gary.
Which Gary? There's been a couple.
The episode was Where No Man Has Gone Before, and it's where they go to like the edge of the galaxy, and he gets mental powers.
Mitchell?
And he's,
Gary Mitchell?
Yeah. Mitchell, you know, Joe Don Baker.
Mitchell. Mitchell.
With the glowing eyes.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a product of his mind. He creates this fake tombstone that says James R. Kirk, and the fanboy explanation is, well, he doesn't know Kirk's real middle name, and so he just guessed.
He just makes one up.
Right. So it's
rather than not one put one in at all. He just
like, how do you
one.
Like this Kirk? James R. Kirk.
Take that.
Maybe a J then if it's a made up in there.
Oh yeah, like Rocket J Squirrel.
Exactly.
Or somebody J something from a show that we're not allowed to talk about.
Talked about several times.
It's always the middle initial in cartoons, isn't it?
Well, really.
That or T.
Well, the reason that Matt Groening does it is as a pay of respect to Rocky and Bullwinkle. So it's sort of a deliberate thing. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. Not to get too far into verboten territory, but the reason that Homer J. Simpson's name is Homer J. Simpson is because of Rocket J. Squirrel. So.
This is
what you'll really like.
Yeah.
Let me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
Again.
That trick never works.
No doubt about it. I got to get a new hat.
Stay tuned for Sarcastic Voyages or Sarcastic Voyage Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Are you still calling us Sarcastic Voyages after all this time?
It was a Star Trek thing. It threw me off. Leave
God
me alone.
Damn it. Then you should call us
Sarcastic Voyager.
Can we at least go with Sarcastic V'ger so it's not like not a reference to that show?
I have to admit, my little minivan that my wife drives around, we nicknamed it V'ger.
Just take off a couple of letters. And,
it's a Plymouth V'ger.
Every time you get in, it says, welcome imperfect carbon unit. But,
I could expect I lost the word.
All right.
Moving
right along. But yeah, going back through the episodes, a lot of them are written a lot better than you would expect. There's a lot of sort of wry humor in there that you don't often see in sort of late 60s TV. A lot of like, you know, subtle nods and little winks and just things that I sort of associated with like 80s and 90s TV where people started to become more aware of irony. But there's a lot of that in there. There's a lot of, and I can kind of see why nerds gravitated toward it, because there's a lot of.
Before the discovery of irony.
Right. Commonly known as the Irony Age. That was for you, Nick. But no, there's a lot of rather well-written shows. And we were talking about this in the pre-show, watching a lot of the earlier episodes, like season one and two, I started wondering why everyone gives Shatner such a hard time. Like, he's not that bad. He's a little intense from time to time, but he's not this crazy caricature. And then you get into season three and it's like, okay, I see it now. That's when he really starts doing the Shatner thing and like, wow.
Like,
I am Kirok.
My God, they've stolen his brain.
What have you done with Spock's brain?
What have you done with Spock's brain? Yeah, it was just like Nicholas Meyer said, he directed Star Trek 2 and 6. Uh-huh. He used to just keep doing take after take of Shatner just so that he would actually, you know, not overact in the final
take. That's awesome. So in this scene, we use take 87.
You just wear it out of him.
Yep.
I'm too tired to overact.
Most subtle performance of his career was the con scene.
he actually did his own echo in that scene, believe it or not.
Still old friend.
You've managed to kill just about everyone else.
Like right. Poor marksman, you keep missing the target.
Right. You know, I had a specific note here. Don't get into hacky Shatner impressions.
Well,
and,
you're going to kill me, Con. You're going to have to come down.
It's too late for that now.
You're going to come down. Yeah.
But if you can't get into that, you can't get into Rocket Man at a convention. And you can't not get into Shatner doing Rocket Man.
Sure we can. We can completely not get into
that. You have to put that in the show notes now.
Well, I do. And anyone who hasn't seen that really does need to see it. But personally, I'm so sick of that.
I actually found people who haven't seen it.
Wow.
That's so sad.
And they thought it was the best thing ever.
It is the first time you see it.
To be fair, it is the best thing ever. But fine.
I'm pretty sure I'm alone here, even among you three. I am tired of Shatner. I'm really tired of his whole shtick. I don't find his music, quote unquote, that funny. It just
really?
Well, don't worry. He'll be dead soon.
All right.
I keep thinking that. No, it's just like, okay, I get it. You're bad. And now you know you're bad. And that's funny, but that's it, really? I don't know. Like, I got, what was it, Has Been? Was that the album or was that just a song from the
episode? That sounded like, yeah.
And I thought it was good for a while and then I just kind of got tired of it. I don't know. And I know you guys all enjoy it.
Well, I think so. I agree, but I do think it's good.
Okay.
There are a lot of good tracks on it.
And I've heard people defend it as good music.
it is good music. I mean, it's not like his first album, whatever the hell that was called.
The Transformed Man. That's an album.
Wow. Yeah.
That's before he knew he was bad and he thought he was being serious. And for anyone who hasn't heard of this album, it's...
I can't get behind that.
Like the Ark and the Covenant.
The tracks are... The first part of it is him doing a dramatic reading, usually from Shakespeare, but I don't think it's all Shakespeare. And it's usually 10 minutes of him doing some kind of a soliloquy. And then it sort of segs into a song. And they're usually popular songs. There's Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. There's Mr. Tambourine Man.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't believe
Mr. Tambourine Man! No, the best part is in the middle of the song when it all calms down, he goes, Mr. Tambourine Man. Mr. Tambourine Man? Like he's lost him. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man. And I just picture him wandering around the mall. Mr. Tambourine Man. Have you seen my mommy?
Mr. Tambourine Man.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was, you know, fascinated by this for a time. And it still amuses me to go up and when I'm doing karaoke and sing Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds the way Shatner does it. But I don't know. I'd like.
See, now I'm just going to have to listen to this entire album.
I have it. I will. I will certainly.
I like on the Wikipedia page, it says, see also William Shatner's musical career.
Does it have it in quotes?
But even better is, see also the Ballad of Bilbo Baggins. Something to do with him.
No, that's Nimoy. Nimoy that's recorded Nimoy.
Oh, I know it's Nimoy, but I mean...
Well, that's related. I mean, you know, they're best friends. I do love that, too. Like, for a long time there in the 80s, we kind of got the impression those guys all hated each other. And starting sometime in the mid-90s, suddenly Shatner and Nimoy are the best of pals and, like,
well, apparently they're okay as long as they don't talk about Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Don't mention the war.
Don't mention
the Romulan war. Yeah.
Bilbo Baggins.
King of the Wild Frontier. Jokes two people will get.
They're smart.
Oh, God. Yeah, but of course, after Star Trek, those guys obviously weren't.
Did a lot of crap.
Did a lot of crap. Well, they weren't doing so great. There was that middle period. I'm fascinated with that middle period. I was telling you guys from sort of a nerd culture standpoint, I think nerds, the way they exist now on the internet, sort of between Star Trek, like after the cancellation, you know, milling around and causing like the first the conventions and fanfic and fan magazines and all that. And then you got sort of the Lord of the Rings guys really becoming a big deal. Like that kind of turned into what we all are now, which is cool. But I really admire those guys who just wouldn't let up until there was a movie. That's so cool. And I think a lot of really interesting stuff came from that period. There's like a lot of good novels and a lot of like comics. And
let us not forget the animated series.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. The series so great they didn't invite Chekhov to come along.
Well, he wrote one of them.
Right. That was his consolation prize. Well, here you
you can write one. Do you want to write one? Oh, you do. Uh-oh.
Oh.
Really?
Cartoon writers were on the sort of like the below rodeo clowns.
I want to write one about a giant Vulcan. Well, that's great.
Now, Walter, you've written a script called The Adventures of Chekhov in Space. Now.
I have two problems with this title, first of all.
We're going to have to get Shatner to play Chekhov.
They actually did a really cool thing on that series. There's a lot of good about that series, believe it or not. James Doohan, who played Scotty, actually was a pretty damn decent voice actor, I think. And he did a lot of the incidental voices on that show. And a lot of times you couldn't even tell. Like he did a really good job of playing Alien Number 2 and Klingon Number 3 and so forth. And Majel Barrett kind of picked up the rest of the slack.
Even better than he does normally during Scotty.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, I'm sure as someone from the UK listening to his Scottish accent is like, listening to Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins. But no, there were some good
guy with you, Captain Kirk.
there was some good writing, I would say, in that series. Like it was very poorly animated and they recycled the same three music cues but looking on the good side of it, there's a lot of really good writing. Like as you mentioned, there's a sequel to the Tribble episode written by the same guy, David Gerald. That was a lot of fun, I thought. There's one I liked a lot, and I can't remember the guy's name now. Was it Niven? Larry Niven, I think?
That sounds really familiar.
David Niven? Tiptoeing.
No. Like a cat, one might say. Yeah. Thank you to all the Hudson Hawk fans out there. it was a really sort of established kind of credible sci-fi writer who wrote this episode, and there was some really cool sort of hard sci-fi stuff going on in it. It was sort of like an alien race had died out and millions of years later, like we all rose up and found one of their relics, and I really enjoyed it as
the slaver weapon.
Yeah, that's the one.
Just off the top of my head.
you're not Googling anything at all over there, are you?
No.
So did I get the writer correct right off the top of your head there, Kev?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, but yeah, there was one of the advantages of the animated series was that they could show aliens on the ship. Like they could show.
That was really cool.
They could show like weird bulbous headed guys.
The weird three armed guy that was on the bridge.
Right. And the cat lady. And
yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. She was basically just like a woman with the head of a cat.
She wasn't green.
The green cat lady. Yeah.
And Bob's like, I can has animated series.
I'll have to watch those now.
Yeah. No, they did some cool, and the designs were kind of, you know, like low budget, pedantic kind of. I mean, Filmation did it. The guys who did He-Man and the guys who did like Fat Albert.
Yeah, and they used the same music like for a good number of cues as well.
Oh, for He-Man?
Fat Albert?
Yeah, exactly. Bill Cosby introduced them.
Right.
Star Trek and the Masters of the Universe.
Well, I know Captain Kirk and his friends, they sure are getting in a lot of trouble today. The ground might learn something.
Cabib Tibbin. Dabbit Ibis Ibalabajikabuckle.
You might learn a thing or two.
Yeah, you know, usually I worry about people.
The universe in the spaceship. Mm-hmm.
Usually I worry about people suing us, but fuck Filmation, really.
And of course, Star Trek.
Do they even exist anymore?
I'm not sure.
I think they do, actually.
Oh, fuck them anyway. But there really was some decent writing. There's actually, I think, sort of fandom kind of overall agrees, kind of like where City on the Edge of Forever was more or less regarded as the best original series episode. There's Yesteryear is an episode of, which I think, did that involve the Guardian Forever as well, actually?
Yes, it did, actually, yeah.
But it deals with a lot of Spock's early life, and I think DC Fontana wrote it.
And there's a lot of stuff in that they actually use in later series as well.
Right, and that's, I think, the only animated episode that's actually used as canon. Like, they actually consider the events of that. There's a lot of stuff from Spock's early life and stuff about Vulcan culture, and it's really cool.
And DC Fontana wrote that as well.
Right. She's
I didn't look that up. I knew that.
No, I knew that as well. I don't even remember which was pre-show now, so I might be repeating myself here, but she was a female writer, one of the head writers on the show, Dorothy Fontana, and for whatever reason, it was kind of like a big no-no, like, oh, women can't write TV, so she had to go by DC, and apparently her kind of being a big part of that show kind of inspired other female sci-fi writers and stuff, and so it's kind of cool to see that show actually kind of setting an example for people, so that was nice. Cool. But yeah, she was good, and that episode was quite good. There's a lot of good stuff in there. There's a lot of crap in there too, but
oh yeah.
But because it's animated, they could go to planets like an underwater planet or, you know, an all lava planet and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Or they can just go into space and have a line written around them.
Oh right.
it's like
yeah, the protective suits.
Space suit on.
Right. They just draw a thick white line around you. Oh, that's our force fields that we have. I forgot about that. But it was nice to also to have the whole crew except for Chekhov doing their own voices. That was, you know, that was nice.
Man, we don't need Chekhov. We have two cool aliens now.
Actually, if I remember correctly, the story was that Nimoy said, I won't do it if you don't bring along, I think it was T'Kay and Nichols. Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't want this just to be white dudes. You really, like, we kind of set an example for multicultural stuff. If the Asian dude and the black chick are out, I'm not doing it. And
oh, that's awesome.
And they said, well, okay.
And then Koenig just left with his hands in his pockets.
I don't even care. Someday I'm going to be on Babylon 5.
whatever that is.
Walking away with the sad Charlie Brown music. Do, do, do. Yeah.
Refolder, Koenig.
Yeah, but now he has his own friends and keys and credit cards, so it's okay. But then, you know, like I say, there was that whole period where just nothing happened and fandom just grew to this incredible, ridiculous pitch. And then the movie came out and, well, it sure was a movie.
It was going to be a series originally.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, that was, what do you call it? Star Trek.
Star Trek Phase 2.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then for some, 99. I don't know, they decided to make it into a series. So they got Nimoy back.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, they were trying to make it a series, and then Star Wars came out, and they're like, fuck, we need to do a movie.
Yeah, probably, because, I mean, everything was like that at that time.
Yeah, everyone suddenly, like, there was that big boom in sci-fi stuff. But really, more than anything, I think it was, it had a very 2001 feel, and that doesn't really work Star Trek. It was so slow, and it tried to be ponderous, and and that just doesn't work in that setting. You need more action and not a lot of
torpedoes away.
I hear Chapel's an MD now. About
4 hours long.
Yeah. And that first pass on the Enterprise, like, it's beautiful. It's great seeing the ship, like we were talking about before, seeing the whole ship.
Right.
But
for 6 hours.
Yeah, you know, when you actually see that in the theater,
mm-hmm.
you can tell why they spent so much time on it. It is actually really beautiful, and
I bet it looks especially good in blue right now too.
Yeah,
but it's, you know, it's like you gotta see it like on a huge, enormous screen so you can actually like appreciate that you have time to kind of look over this detailed model.
Right.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, because if you see it on a little TV in standard def, it's like, okay, why the hell are we spending so much time on this?
Right.
But I mean, like, I saw that for the first time when I was 12 in my basement, and it's just like, hurry up.
Yeah. And I remember, I distinctly remember, this isn't a joke, I'm serious, they made an extended version of it for TV broadcasts. It was like 12 extra minutes of footage, and those 12 extra minutes went there. Went on the approach to the ship.
Taking another pass of the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Well, let's see what the
I remember
NASA.
There's more minutes as well, which was just like, the music of the credits.
There's no additional credits.
No, actually, it was music before the credits. So there were no credits, just black screen with more music.
Wow. That's oh my God. But I mean, as if you could edit it down to like a trim 90 minutes or something and just make that whole ridiculous ship shot like a DVD extra, it's an okay story. Like, it's a decent original series story. I mean,
it's just the changeling from the original series.
More or less. With bits of what would become Next Gen in there. I mean, Will Decker and his girlfriend, the half telepath, and the, you know, mm-hmm. there's something here, but
there's something here, just not good enough for this movie.
Right.
It was a pilot. It felt like a pilot.
Yeah, pilot. What's a pilot?
Well, it originally was.
Right. And it's interesting that in Next Gen, the couple of times that they were hit by the writer's strike, they're like, this is basically the same show. Let's just recycle stuff from that unsold show. And they used, was it Devil's Due and,
yay.
What was the other one?
Oh,
The Child.
The Child.
With the alien rape comet, which we'll be talking about later.
not the cheese rape one.
No, cheese rape is a whole other thing.
Thank you for resurrecting that, by the way.
Twitter hilarity.
Oh, I didn't.
Are you using your cheese bucket for something other than cheese?
This is one of those things on Twitter that 7 or 8 people are making completely different jokes and different references, and someone just ties them all together, and suddenly cheese is being raped. I'm like, what the – what have we become? And this is why, listeners, we've told you –
What we had to become.
Oh, well. What we've always become. Raping cheese. But really, people listening, we've told you this before. If you're on Twitter and you follow some of us, you're going to miss out on this great stuff like cheese rape, really. You got to follow all of us.
Yeah, I want to object to great.
What were we talking about?
The motion picture, I think. I'm vaguely trying to steer us chronologically without getting too wrapped up in you know, linear nerdness here.
Star Trek 2.
Yeah. Nah, that's no good. Let's move on. Star Trek 2, it amazes me that this is everyone's favorite Star Trek movie. I mean,
it's so good.
It's really good.
But ignoring the new movie, what's your favorite then?
Yeah.
I honestly don't know. 2 probably is. I'm not saying it's a bad movie at all. It's just for people who don't like Star Trek that much, they still say that. And it's like, really? You really like Shatner overacting and Ricardo Montalban overacting and his greased pecs? And like,
well, that's his real chest, by the way.
Corinthian leather.
Of course it is. It is. I never really
Nick
thought.
Nick Meyer said that it was.
Well, if Nick Meyer can whip Shatner into shape, then he can do anything. So I believe it. it's got a lot of cheese to it, and it's good cheese, and it's cheese that we as Star Trek fans have come to accept.
Yeah.
But for outside people to say, oh, I don't like Star Trek, but I love Wrath of Khan. Like, you do?
It's just a great story. You know?
And what really boggles my mind is I know a few people who are really into Star Trek, and they do that even numbered rule thing, which I've always thought is bullshit. That's because 2, 3, and 4 are like one giant movie to me.
Mm-hmm.
And 3
is a lot better than people give it credit.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, fuck yeah, it is.
2 and 3 are basically the same movie. They just kind of divide it up. Like, it rolls completely, you know, together. They feel the same to me. And for people to say, well, the odd numbered ones suck. 3 was just as good as 2, I think. And I mean, there's so many. Do you disagree? I mean, let's hear the argument for this. I'd really like to hear.
I don't disagree.
From what I've seen, it's not that the odd number ones are bad. It's just there are 6 Star Trek movies and 2 of them are bad.
Yeah, but and 1 and 5 are bad. Yeah. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You keep Roddenberry away from it and you keep Shatner away from it and you're good.
So DS9 it's so well.
3 has I don't know, some stuff that God, I totally lost where I was going with this. I'm sorry. Some of the stuff with the Klingons was a little goofy to me, but it does have some really, really great moments.
The Klingons didn't bother me that at all.
I just love the stealing the Enterprise whole.
Yeah.
Bit. Oh yeah.
Oh, that was great.
And it's so. Think, go ahead.
Yeah, that's great, I think it was more that, like, Christopher Lloyd, just having watched him in so many comedic roles over the years, I couldn't take him too seriously.
I see, but they didn't play them for laughs, so I think that's and I'm not saying, you know, well, you know, you're a bad person for this, but really I think that's kind of your issue, don't you think? Like,
oh, I totally do,
because I think he's
saying it's everybody else's issue.
right. No, I know. I'm just saying people who think that are kind of typecasting him, because I thought he did great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
but if you don't, like, I kind of want to hear, do you think he just didn't live up to it, or
just hangs up and storms off the podcast?
It's just that, no. It's just something about the way he delivers lines, period.
That's fair.
I find amusing, and just in that context, he still delivered the lines the same way. So it just,
well, I mean, kind of, you know, you can definitely hear him go, Marty!
Yeah.
Right. Speaking!
But I mean,
let me hear. Because you wish it.
Now that was, I mean, that was a great comedic line there.
Shave and a haircut.
That because you wish it was definitely like, he had to have a little bit of comedic timing there. It's,
yeah.
Of course, the whole, you know.
I still love the movie.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a bad movie at all, by any means.
To me, one of the big deals about it is that it's really the first good look you get at what sort of modern Klingons are, like what actual Klingons, like you get a brief glimpse of them in the motion picture, but they're there for 30 seconds and they speak one line and then they're gone. You see them with the ridges, you see them in the armor, you see them in the bird of prey doing their thing, speaking their language. And it's like, you could really see how Next Gen kind of built on that. And for the first time, they're not just like guys in blackface and Fu Manchu mustaches. They're actually like,
I'm just like, man, it must be really hot on Klingon ship.
Yeah. Just so greasy and.
Oh, bleh. I know.
Yeah. Red. Yeah.
A true warrior fights sweaty.
Red like lava.
But I mean, that was one of the big things for me. Just symbolically, like, and I don't want to get too deep into it, but like the fact that Kirk has to give up absolutely everything that's important to him to like, it builds on that thing from Wrath of Khan where it's like, no, I always win. I can cheat and I can do anything I want because I'm Captain Kirk. And three is like, nope, if you want your best friend back, you got to fuck up your career. You got to lose your ship. You got to lose your son. Like it was a nice, like, no, Kirk, you're wrong. You're getting older. You can't just win every time. And I liked that whole theme, that whole, like.
You got to think when he's there getting Spock back, he's going to think, you know, I really shouldn't have done this.
Yeah. Was this really worth it? Do I really like this guy that much? And when it comes down to it, he's just a coworker. Come on.
It's just like, you know, at the end of the day, he's not really that much of a laugh.
No. And they cut that first scene where he's like, Bill, your name is Bill. No, try again. Oh, which one were you again? No, but I mean, those two movies to me really flow well together, and four also. It's a nice sort of. There's a lot of themes in there. There's a lot of. There was a.
My kids love four.
Well, and I mean, a lot of kids do. It's definitely the more commercial friendly. You know,
when I watched the most when I was a kid,
the first one I ever saw, my first like my inroad to Star Trek was that movie. So I mean,
it does have one of the best scenes ever of anything.
Italian?
Yes.
No. No.
Yes.
No. No.
Yes.
I love Italian.
So do you. There is, and I think Ford did a really good job of, I usually don't like when they take serious things and make them funny at all. I just, stop it. This doesn't work. But they did it beautifully there. They took how serious Spock was and they threw him in comedic situations and just over on. And I don't want to explain why it's funny. You know why it's funny. But
they did the fish out of water thing without making them look stupid.
Right. You know? I mean, there was some confusion, but overall.
Except for Chekhov. They made him look stupid.
But that was still funny. I'm sorry.
I don't think they made him look stupid.
I maintain that was in character.
Your name?
Yeah.
That are the nuclear whistles.
I did not know your name.
Pavel Chekhov, Pavel, rank admiral.
Okay, that was something.
That bit where they're chasing him off the ship. Oh, it goes on forever. I had that. I think
that movie would have been 100% better if they got James Horner to do the music.
But that chase music, come on. No, I think this was back when we were in high school. Bob, you loaned me the sort of the compilation. What was it? The Astral Symphony, I think it was called. Sort of the best of all the scores. And Chekhov's run was like 12 minutes long.
The sequel to Logan's run. Yeah. Not as good.
And it's like the scene just goes on and on and on. And it's just this character we don't care about anyway getting chased by Navy guys. Like, come on, get on with it. But no, overall, I think the humor worked really well. I think Spock
getting
learning
chased by Navy guys, and not even in a good way.
I'm not sure I want to know what that means, Gav. But like Spock learning to swear to me is one of the funniest things ever.
They're like not that.
Yeah. Spock, where's the power you promised me? One damn minute, Admiral. but then you get to five where Shatner's like, I can direct. And they try the humor thing again, and it falls flat. It's like, no.
Row your boat.
Actually, that's the only time it works.
I do have to say, the scene at the beginning where they're at the campfire, that's quite good.
That is good. Yeah. But like, Scotty bonking his head and, like, just.
Yeah, that's not good.
There's so much slapstick and, like, hey, the funny thing worked. Let's do it again.
I can just imagine the rest of the crew being, you know, in you know, reality, Nichelle Nichols and all that being told, oh, by the way, Your director this time is William Shatner.
Oh, God. Nick Meyer's not around to rein him in.
He's going to make you strip mostly naked and do a feather dance.
But
you're okay with that, right?
But I'm 45 now.
She probably was okay with that.
And, you know, Uhura.
Everyone else who watched the movie wasn't.
Uhura in 1968, I would have been all over that. But in 1989, not so much. Yeah. But, yeah, the interesting thing I was reading, those movies had, like, very little budget. I did not know this until recently. Like, compared to sci-fi movies of their time, they had, like, half the budget. It was insane. And some of the stuff the better directors pulled off.
Star Trek V, probably a good thing. It had half the budget.
But the thing is, Star Trek V had the same budget as Star Trek VI, more or less. And look how good. Yes.
Wow.
I may be misspeaking, and please correct me if I am. But it had roughly the same budget as all the others. Like, it didn't have more or less money than any of the others. And it's a really interesting way to look at directors and the way they allocate resources and the way, you know, you can make a little money go a long way if you're a good director. And Shatner wasn't. And it's like, I didn't realize that these were. And boy, what a fantastic job he did too. I mean, thank God for that. But looking at. What were effectively low budget movies? They really did a fucking fantastic job when you look at it that way. I mean, Six especially didn't feel like didn't feel like it was low budget. It felt like a big epic sci-fi movie. It was great.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of scenes that they wrote that they had to cut because the budget was like next to nothing. Apparently, they wanted to show what everyone was doing before they got called back to duty. They wanted to do this whole montage of like Uhura's over here, Scotty's over here, and
oh man, that would have been really interesting.
On his boat.
Yeah, that suits me. I just bought a boat, but now I'm going to go to a Dyson sphere and yeah. But yeah, it's just interesting to see. And of course, this is my one Shatner story that I don't think I've even told on the podcast. So I need to tell it once. You guys are all sick of it, I'm sure. But
that thing again.
Yeah. Years ago on America Online, there was a guy in a chat room claiming to be William Shatner. And of course, nobody believed him. And some of us kind of played along, like, okay, sure, you're Shatner, whatever. And I say, hey, Bill, I got a question for you. Star Trek V, what were you thinking? And and he answers, blind panic. I hope someone knew what they were doing. And so I get an email later from Entertainment Weekly that says, hey, that really was Shatner. This was kind of a little experiment with this whole new internet thing. It's like 1995. And do we have your permission to use the chat room transcripts in our magazine? Fuck yes. they sent up the attachment was Shatner holding up that day's newspaper as proof. And I still have that picture and I'll put it in the show notes. Nice. And I'm in the October something 1995 edition of Entertainment Weekly. And if that's online, I'll also link to that. And it's just got one line for me saying Star Trek V, what were you thinking? And him saying, you know, blind panic. I was hoping someone knew what they were doing, but it was just kind of a nice, like, yeah, it was great for me to get published and all that. But really, if that's his standard answer now, then you know, kudos to him for realizing, okay, we fucked up. That's a bad movie. I need to start telling people, oops. So
I know he's saying now that he was, you know, when they were releasing the DVDs or the Blu-rays, they were trying to get more money, you know, to finish it off.
Oh, right. Go do a special edition.
He was trying to do... Like, special effects is going to make any difference whatsoever.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, but I don't mind the movie. But the problem is,
if they could somehow digitally remove,
you're looking for God.
Yeah, which I mean, Star Trek did deal with issues like that, but that's a bit.
Oh, yeah.
But
especially, you either don't find them or you do.
But
and that's not going to work well on a movie.
Right. And of course, they never did answer the central question of the movie, which is, what does God need with a starship?
No, they don't.
So,
look, I just want to tool around the galaxy for a while. I don't see what the problem is.
Look, it's the Enterprise, okay? I mean,
don't see what the goddamn problem is.
Wouldn't you want it? Come on.
I took my name in vain.
And then, of course, Six thankfully rescued the franchise because, oh, God.
Six was fucked. Awesome.
I mean, looking back on it now, I have...
Before we move on,
is
Spock's brother considered canon now, or is it...
Yeah, he...
Well, now none of it's canon now, but...
Not by Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah, but Gene didn't like Six either, is the thing.
Gene didn't like any movie where they didn't go back in time and say John F. Kennedy's life.
Yeah.
Which is actually true.
Oh, yeah.
Save John F. Kennedy's life, huh?
Yeah.
That's what he wanted to do. That's what he's like.
That was his idea for, like, all of them, I think.
Well, thankfully, Red Dwarf picked that up and ran with it. But
yeah.
Because they were making a movie and they say, what do you think of this? It's not good. But you're not going back in time and saying John F. Kennedy's life. So then they give him a script for four and he's like, oh, this is good. You're going back in time. Not saving John F. Kennedy's life.
That's awesome. I don't care if you're making that up or not. That's a great story.
That is a great story. No, I read it in like Star Trek Memories or a movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But yeah, apparently he didn't like 5 or 6. He didn't like anything that made it look like there were racists in the future or made it look like, you know, like he had that perfect idea of the utopia of the future and no one could be, you know.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, that doesn't, like, it's a nice idea, but it doesn't make for good fiction.
No, and I think we need
which is why Voyager is just garbage.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, you know, that's why Deep Space Nine works so well. It's like, okay, finally, look, really, if you're going to have conflict, these people have to have ugly, you know, qualities. There has to be some bigotry. There has to be some, you know, jealousy. They have to be. People aren't perfect in the future. We're not looking at stories about human beings if you do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we really just need to come out on the record and say, look, and most fans of Star Trek already know this, but really, Gene Roddenberry, I'm glad he created Star Trek. He had a lot of really good ideas, but he wasn't a very good writer. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
He just wasn't.
Are you kidding? He created Andromeda.
Which will be his legacy. Star what?
Is that the thing with like Kevin Sorbo, Hercules?
Yes.
Is
that was it, wasn't it? Yes.
I haven't even heard of it.
But one other thing, but I can't remember what it is.
Wasn't it Earth 2 or Earth?
Earth. Oh, I can't remember.
Final Conflict or something like that?
It was Earth 1990. No, fuck.
No, it doesn't matter. What it was bad.
Airport 76.
What I honestly, Gene Roddenberry's legacy is creating Star Trek and
that's it.
And introducing the world to Majel Barrett, who is the most awesome woman who's ever lived.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, Earth's Final Conflict.
Yeah.
We got that settled.
When Gene Roddenberry died, I was like, oh, well, that's kind of sad, but Star Trek will go on. And when Majel Barrett died last year, I was like, oh, now what?
Man.
Who's going to voice the computers now?
Yeah, exactly.
It'll go on, but it'll never sound the same.
No, but she did the voice of the computer in the movie.
Yeah, and you
she
know, did. I didn't spot
she
that.
She did? I didn't recognize it.
I didn't spot it at first, but you're right. On the repeat viewings, when New Chekhov is doing his, you know, weaker, and the computer says, access not recognized. That's definitely Majel Barrett saying that.
Huh.
It's really cool.
It won't be in the next movie.
No, unfortunately. Unless they could always recycle, like, the computer only says, you know, a dozen things anyway.
They could do that.
Actually. Working. I mean, you know, as long as you don't give the computer, like, complicated lines.
Don't make the computer take over the ship or anything.
Yeah. There was a great Peter David written novel that it was kind of the prologue was set in Captain Pike's time, so it had Number One, the character of Number One that was played by Majel Barrett in the cage, and then like after the prologue, you came to Kirk's time. It was like this planet that was hidden in an anomaly that only opened every 30 years or something like that.
It was really good.
It was, but there was a nice little nod to the fans. Peter David was great at this. The Enterprise was brand new, like it was one of its first voyages, and Number One was setting up the computer, like setting, you know, getting everything set up for the first time. And she recorded all the voice stuff for it, which was a nice little.
That's really cool.
That's why it sounds like Majel Barrett, because the character she played recorded the voice.
Nice.
And Peter David loved that kind of little, like, it doesn't affect anything, it doesn't contradict anything, but it adds to the kind of the tapestry, and it was nice. Well,
which
I've been
book
reading.
Was it?
It's called The Rift.
I've got it. I can find you the name, but yeah, The Rift.
Yep,
it?
The Rift.
Sorry. Anyway, go ahead.
I've been reading. John Byrne's been doing a lot of Star Trek comics lately, and all like he's been doing one called Crew that's about Number One.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, they're really good, but like you're just like, could we please address this character by a name? It's getting really pathetic.
Yeah, I don't know how they would have planned to do that on the show. Like if they were give her a name or just call her Number One. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. So what you're saying is she's not a number. She's a free lady.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So yeah, 6 is a great movie. I have some issues with, like, there's some pretty bad plot holes, I think. But overall.
What plot holes?
You know, I knew you were going to say
that. I'm sure there are several plot holes.
I knew you were going to say that. And off the top of my head, now I don't know. Some bits about the conspiracy. I'll see if I can sort them out and write them down
and
put them
in the theatrical version or the extended unmasking version.
I don't think the unmasking fixed it.
Oh yeah, René
Auberjonois.
Yeah, Odo.
Thank you.
Rene Odo.
Rene Bergeron.
Yeah, he's in the extended version, isn't he?
Yeah, there's a whole bit where they try to, this is one of the things Gene really hated, where Starfleet, like upper Starfleet, yeah, comes in and says, let's go kill those bastards. Let's go rescue our prisoners and wipe these guys out or whatever. And the president's like, no, we can't do that. And then at the end, he's like one of the conspirators, and they take one of the Klingons' masks off, and it's really a human.
It was old man Witherby from the...
Right, exactly. Park. All along. And
would have gotten away with it, too, if it weren't for that meddling Kirk.
There's just... Some of the conspiracy was just kind of sloppy, I thought. And, of course, Chekhov has the worst comic relief lines.
I know you don't like that.
You could cut him out of that movie, and it would be so much better.
West Woo's Wumming Woo winner.
Yeah. And just like all, the only thing he adds is bad comic relief. He doesn't do anything useful. And it's
the only thing he adds is sadness.
And Uhura is like, she suddenly has lost all of her linguistic ability, and she's like reading and stuff. English manual.
Yeah. And they never really explain why.
You know what? This is the worst movie ever. I hate it.
I think they tried to play some stuff for laughs, and they end up losing the story, like showing that Uhura was I don't know that they ever did that, Bob, is the thing. I don't know until the new movie. No. They never came out and said she knows languages.
No, she sang in the original series, though. Yeah, which I didn't realize. Like, no, in the first like five or six episodes, she was like singing in every episode.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the one with Nomad, she was singing all the time.
Yeah, yep. That's the...
It even annoyed Nomad. What are you doing?
So it's like Nomad is Al and Uhura is Matt.
Yes.
That example. But I think that was kind of a fan thing, kind of in the novels and stuff, like that she was a linguist. She's really not just a telephone operator, really. She does useful stuff. Look, xenolinguistics. And the movie kind of picked up on that and said, yeah, obviously, if she does an important job, she's not just pushing a button. She does something useful.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that's what the new movie, one of its really great things was that it took the lesser characters and it gave them something to do.
It made everyone useful.
As one of the biggest Star Trek fans that I know who's really into this stuff, I watched it and I watched Chekhov do that, the physics thing where he beamed Kirk and Sulu on.
I can do this.
And that was so cool. But then I'm like, can he do that? And I'm going back through all my memories and all my like episode guides and encyclopedias and all that crap. I'm like, has he ever done anything useful ever? And I could not remember when he had, and it was
you
like
think about it.
And
the only thing that comes to mind is that time he did that jig.
Well, you know,
all he seems to do in the original series is make reference to Russia.
Ugh. Yeah, wrong references to Russia.
Yeah, he's that guy who thinks that everything.
Just her cat? No, it was the Minsk cat.
Right.
No, it wasn't.
I do think that line in six that I still quote all the time. It was good, which is that. Perhaps you are familiar with the Russian epic of Cinderella. If shoe fits, wear it. I use that and people always stare at me and say, what the fuck are you talking about?
I like how you got a bit aggressive towards the end. If shoe fits, wear it.
Wear it.
Motherfucking wear it.
At least Cinderella is actually a Russian story.
Yeah, but, you know, it's still Chekhov, so it's still lame. But, yeah, that's... And I guess that's it for those guys. I mean, there was the animated series. Oh, the books. That's what I wanted to talk about. That's really where I came into really appreciating this crew is like, cause I didn't really watch the show. It wasn't really available to me sort of when I was older. Like it wasn't being rerun anymore and I couldn't get a hold of the tapes. This was before DVD. And so I started at the library checking out books that looked good. And there are quite a few that really flesh out the world and really give you a good idea of like the whole Kirk Spock McCoy dynamic and all that stuff. And we mentioned Peter David and we mentioned, who else? There's a few really good authors out there.
Dillard.
A.C. Crispin.
Right. A.C. Crispin.
Dillard.
Dillard. Right. Some initial Dillard. Yeah. J.M. Thank you. But there's a lot of decent.
No one actually has first names. It's just all of it.
Well, all the broads do that, sort of a tribute
broads?
To yeah.
Did you nothing?
Yeah, it taught me that women can't pilot spaceships.
Yeah, in your world of Starfleet captains,
Kirk always gets the girl.
Yeah,
and the girl always
Starfleet authors. No one has. No.
Well, it's supposed to be a sort of a tribute to DC Fontana, but yeah, it is. It is a little strange. But there's some really. I mean, there's a lot of crap out there. Let's not oversell it. But there's a lot of really good Star Trek books out there. And it's like, that's kind of how I got into the original crew and reading these, I mean, cause they're light reading, but there's still some really good stuff. There's one called Spock's World in particular that I like. That's a lot of background on the way the Vulcans were this sort of like violent savages and they had to do the logic thing to tame themselves.
The Lost Years was really good.
Oh yeah, there was a series called The Lost Years that takes place between the series and the first movie.
But I mean, like the first one of those was just called The Lost Years.
Right. But then they ended up doing two or three in that.
Yeah.
Like they ended up being I don't even remember now. It's been a long time. All I remember is on the cover they had Disco Bones, which was
yes.
as he appeared in the motion picture with his long beard and his platform shoes and his bell bottoms.
Oh, that's awesome.
And his medallions. I can't forget the medallions.
Oh yeah.
Retirement hit Bones hard.
Yeah. But I would even say, and I don't know if you guys have read any of these or not, but even the books that were written by Shatner, they're not terrible.
Because they're not written by Shatner.
Well,
they're written by many, many other people.
Right. Well, I know Judith and Garfield Reeve Stevens, who wrote a lot of
Ashes of Eden was the first one, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it says Shatner with their help, but I'm pretty sure it's them because they've written really good Star Trek books on their own. And Ashes of Eden I quite like.
They're just being like, is this good for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, put your name on.
I picture him just like sending them an email or whatever, or just call them just like, bring Kirk back.
Yeah. Well, wait, is this Bob? How did you get our number? But you mentioned the Ashes of Eden, which was the first. He ended up doing a ton of those, but that was the first one. And that was actually a nice sort of like post-Star Trek VI in his sad old man years. It sort of fills in the gap between VI and Generations where they show his death. And it was a nice, like, he tries to find a young chick and recapture the glory, and he just doesn't – it doesn't really work for him. And he ends up stealing the Enterprise, and that doesn't work for him. And it's just...
You'd think they'd have, like, anti-Kirk thing.
Right. Well, no, I think the deal was, you know, at the end of VI, they said they're going to decommission the ship. And I think they were going to, like, drive it into the sun or something. And, like, so they didn't care. Like, fine, take it, whatever. I actually don't remember. And, Gav, if you've read it and you – remember, like, feel free to correct
me. I read some of it, but don't. It was like a long time ago.
I actually quite, like I said, I quite enjoyed it. One of the really cool things I thought was they had this race of half Klingon, half Romulan people that were trying to. They were like sort of the symbol of galactic peace. It was like, look, these two guys hate each other. If they can coexist and breed, then you know there's hope for the galaxy or something like that. And he ends up falling for one of them, and it's like it was a nice sort of capper.
Nemesis 3.
What's that? Oh, and yeah. to forget that movie.
It took me a while to get the Galactic Peace thing.
Everyone's trying to forget Star Trek V, Dave. I really wish you would.
but that's my job.
Someone has to remember.
Remember. But it was a nice cap to the, like, in VI, Kirk was a little bit of a racist. Like,
oh, yeah.
Which is why Roddenberry didn't like it. He didn't like the idea that Kirk would be anti-Klingon. Like,
but, I mean, that makes perfect sense.
It does. I mean, Klingon, you know, yeah. Klingon bastard killed his son. Come on.
Yeah. And even before that, he was
killed
never like
his son who he known for, like, 20 minutes.
Right.
He killed my son, who I love like a woman.
I'm curious about that. I thought, like, Roddenberry's whole thing was that, like, conflict could come from outside, but inside the spaceship, the people working were all working in harmony together, right?
Yeah, the humans were supposed to represent, like, the perfect future. Like, we've overcome disease, hunger, war, racism, and we're perfect people now. So all the humans...
That's not so far outside. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying that's not so far outside of that. Then if it's, you know, the conflict is coming from the Klingons, I mean, why is that?
Yeah, but one of the major conceits of that movie was that Kirk was seriously biased by his hatred of Klingons.
Like, it's okay for the Klingons to hate Kirk, but he's supposed to be beyond hating them.
Right. Oh, and the fact that Christopher Lloyd Klingon killed his son, Kruge killed his son, he now hates all Klingons. I mean, that's bigotry. That's not being angry at the guy who killed your son. That's hating a whole race for the actions of one person. And that's... Mm-hmm. They're not supposed to do that.
I mean, even in the original series, they've always, you know, it was, they're untrustworthy. They're,
sure.
You know, there's always an initial reaction whenever anyone sees one, you know, pull out your phasers, they're just Klingon.
Well, I mean, they were also at war with them, weren't they?
Not really. It was like the Cold War, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they had some direct conflict.
It was kind of before the Cold War.
Right. No, it was during the Cold War.
Well, okay. All right.
But, I mean, they had a very obvious, like, Vietnam, you know, parallel there, which was going on at the time. And that was definitely a Cold War thing. That was the big superpowers using a tiny country as kind of a, you know, like a surrogate kind of thing. But, and this is what I hear, and I could be wrong, but I thought he didn't like it because, and all the characters were like that. Like, Scotty has a line like, I bet that Klingon bitch killed her father. And just like, they're all just so like, oh, those people are bad because they're another race. I'm like, well, but they're Klingons.
But they were that way in the original series, I guess, is my point.
Maybe he got into this whole revisionist thing. I don't know. Like, cause yeah, I mean, George Lucas did that too, where Star Wars was a big adventure film and suddenly it was like an epic, you know, right. But it didn't start out that way. And I think maybe Roddenberry had the same thing where it's like, oh yeah, we had an Asian guy and a black chick. So it's really about a perfect future and harmony. Now that I have time to think about it. I don't know. I mean,
I have a Russian as well.
Yeah. Who looks like Davy Jones for some reason. Why not? You know, the monkeys, they're Russian, aren't they?
But that actually stemmed from like viewer mail during the first season, right? Because them saying, you know, well, the Russians were actually first in a number of things in the space race with the U.S. early on. Why aren't there any?
Well, Russian and that makes sense. What doesn't make sense is making him also Davy Jones. Like, why? Yeah.
Well, that was from letters. Well, it's like, we like Star Trek and all, but could you maybe have one of the monkeys on?
But no, I mean, I definitely. Yeah,
but they actually meant one of the like species of monkeys,
right? Monkey bastard.
Maybe you could get the monkey from Lost in Space.
But I danger, danger. Jokes only one person will get. But I believe that's why Gene didn't care for that, and so it was still regardless. Ashes of Eden was a nice little like Kirk hooks up with this chick who's half Romulan and half Klingon, and it's like, okay, well, we saw him being kind of an old, you know, stuck in the old ways, kind of racist guy. And it was a nice sort of coda to that. Like, no, he's still trying to change. And he's willing to, you know, if she's hot enough, he's willing to look the other way about the race thing, the race handicap, you know.
The fact that Kirk only had one son.
No, the fact that we only saw one of Kirk's sons. That, you know.
Yeah. That was the one time it broke.
It means he's a bit impotent, is what you're saying.
Well, come on. I mean, his best friend, well, I mean, depending on, you know, how you interpret it, one of his best friends was one of the best surgeons in the galaxy. So I'm sure he must have had something. He must have had some space age birth control to hook him up there. You know, I mean,
it's your pills, Jim. I'm trying to eat them all by the end of the week.
Are my hands going to blow up the big balloons again?
Here's your damn pills.
I loved Bones' attitude in the new movie. Like every time Kirk would like be like chasing a skirt, like, hey, how you doing? And Bones would just roll his eyes like, ah, here we go again. Like, I'm going to study tonight. Yeah, you're going to study.
I'm going to have to give you another prescription for space crabs again.
Andorian, like herpes or something.
Little space crabs.
He's got an infestation of Andorian slime devils.
Denebian slime devils.
My apologies.
Come on. Come on, damn it. Get it right. But I think one of my favorite books is kind of a throwaway one, and it's really kind of a title-based thing, and Matt actually called it out as this sounds like kind of a sitcom setup, and it does, but it's still really great. It's called Doctor's Orders, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It's Bones is bitching about how he can run the ship better, and Kirk says, fine, me and Spock are going on an away mission. You're in charge. Bye. And it's just a nice...
but I'm a doctor.
I'm a doctor, not a captain.
Oh, I'm almost certain that line's in it.
I owe you. You owe me a Coke.
Somebody owes somebody a Coke. Yeah, there's but I mean, it is a nice character thing. It is a nice because he does always say, you know, you got to think about the human lives here. And so to put him in the spot and to say, well, okay, you make the call. It was a nice. I like that kind of thing.
But I don't want to.
I just want to yell at you for it. I just want to be a backseat captain.
Don't complain about it.
Right.
Look, I got my own thing. Come on.
Who's going to watch
your decisions, and then I'll go on the internet and complain.
Damn it, Jim! I'm not going to read Spider-Man anymore because. Very nice.
Deal with the devil. Come on.
He's an android, not a robot. God. Bendis just doesn't know what he's doing. Are you bald-headed?
Oh, boy. Son of a bitch.
There's actually an episode of Redacted where it's called Doctor's Orders, which is pretty much the same thing, I think.
Ah, that's a shame. Yeah. Actually, I know Judith and Garfield Reeve Stevens wrote some episodes for that, but they still weren't very good.
Yeah, I think they wrote some of the episodes of the last season just to pretend it was good again.
Which Redacted are we talking about?
Enterprise.
Yeah.
Well, the sad thing about that is that technically, in canon, that show still exists.
Yeah.
Scott Bakula was still a captain, and now Picard and Sisko and Janeway may never have happened, but Scott Dracula is still. yeah,
and also they're not called Draculas.
No, you don't call a starship captain a Bakula. That's bad. This is Bakula James T. Kirk. Yeah, no, that doesn't work.
Bakula trophy.
Yeah, but sadly, that's still continuity. And in fact, there was even that line where Scotty says, Admiral Archer's prize beagle. And I was like, oh, damn it.
But it's not going to be the same one, though.
Right.
Different beagle.
Different beagle.
Different beagle. Different Bakula.
Right. That'd be nice. Take that, Bakula.
How far was Enterprise from, like, Star Trek?
You know, I don't remember, actually. It was supposed to be the midpoint between now and Kirk's time. So, like,
because, I mean, that's still kind of a long time.
Well, I mean, it's the 21st century now, and Kirk and those guys were in the mid-23rd, so it was probably somewhere in the 22nd. So
it was like 20 or 40 years or something like that.
20 or 40 years ahead of us, or before?
Before Star Trek was 20 or 40 years before them.
Okay.
I think.
So it's just like around 2200 somewhere. Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that Scott Bakula could still be alive in young Kirk's time.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Bakula the Immortal.
You can't kill me.
You can't destroy me.
Was that Mr. Schmuck?
No. That was Marshy, who sounds a lot like Mr. Schmuck, actually. Are you looking it up now?
I was just checking Memory Alpha. It says...
Which actually, by the way, if you're really into this nerd stuff, is probably the best resource for this stuff.
Star Trek Wikipedia.
Yeah. It gets bogged down in the nerd stuff a little bit, but it's really informative and not too nitpicky.
A lot of that stuff's really interesting.
You know? It is. It actually is. And they put a lot of like behind the scenes stuff in there too. It's definitely a good resource.
Cardassia. I'm sold.
Yep. Sign me up. So 2150. I do remember because I do being, you know, a supplemental book nerd. I do have the chronology. And I remember when Enterprise launched, and you say it was 2150-ish?
Yes.
Is when it's supposed to be
2151. Yeah.
Right. I remember looking at my chronology just like, oh, what goes on there? Like, what are they going to frame this around? Like, ooh, that was first contact with the Romulans when they fight the Romulans. This show's going to be about fighting Romulans. That'll be cool. And then they never really did that.
Yep. That would have been awesome.
Because that's where they've already established through other lines of dialogue and whatever. Like, that's around the time they started fighting the Romulans. They're like, awesome. And no, let's not do that. Let's do something else.
Why would that be interesting?
Yeah. Instead, we showed when we first met the Borg, let's throw some Borg in here. And we showed the first time we met the Ferengi, but let's have some Ferengi in here. Like, come on, man.
So sick of the Borg.
Yeah, well, yeah. They're all dead now, apparently, so there's that.
Yep. Are they?
That's what Matt tells me. That was one of my biggest problems with Voyager was like you take that great Next Gen episode where you have, you know, Hugh, the guy who was like cut off from the collective and had to learn what it was like to be human again.
Mm-hmm. And throw
some tits on him and then just like, here you go. Here's your new crew member. Like, oh.
And then she fought the Rock.
Wait, what?
What?
You ever saw that one?
I didn't. No. Do
you smell what the Rock is cooking?
Yes, exactly. That is exactly it.
I know.
That was, what do you call it? She fought the Rock. She wrestled him.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I mean, good for
this
the Rock.
An episode,
because,
or...
No, that's it's an actual episode because UPN had Voyager and UPN also had some wrestling show.
Mm.
And they were cross-promoting them. And
wow.
He did an episode where 7 and 9 gets kidnapped and goes to this arena planet.
Oh, wow. I vaguely remember that.
And she fights the Rock with a tiny ridge on his nose.
Oh, man.
She should have fought the law.
Well, we know how that battle turns out. So. Yeah.
Oh, man. No, I didn't know that. But I mean, I gave Voyager about the first year, and then I popped back in from time to time.
Yeah.
But great premise really ruined. We'll actually address this later. I don't want to get bogged down in this show so much now.
I just want to I probably shouldn't, but at this point, I just want to say Stargate Universe,
mm-hmm.
which is basically just Voyager, but done right.
Oh, all right.
Really?
Then.
Because I'm not a big fan of Stargate at all in any way. I watched about the first season and a half of the original series, and it was just it was just a bit garbage, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've watched Stargate Universe recently, and it's a bit Battlestar Galactica-y.
So it's, I'm guessing
it is actually quite good, and I have been enjoying it.
I'm guessing the element between those shows is that they're somewhere lost, like in unexplored space. And...
Yeah, they're in a ship. In an unexplored space, and they're trying to get home.
Oh.
But basically, it's done right.
Well, and that's definitely done. A good concept, like if you did it right. So I could definitely see.
Right. It's done where they're trying to find food and find energy and things like that, and they're dealing with characters.
Right. That's
how
I was.
The thing about it is I was reading on TVGuide.com or something like that, or EpGuys.com, where someone who's a big Stargate fan, and he was saying how rubbish it was that they're dealing with emotional plots and they should be dealing with more with science fiction.
Well, then that right there, I want to like it out of spite. Just if some internet nerd hates it, then I'm well, okay. Good. Let's watch it.
You can always have too much emotional plot.
Right. Who wants to see characters dealing with like inner turmoil and feelings and stuff? I mean,
we could watch laser guns.
Right. But you can have both. I don't remember what I was going to say. Oh, the last thing I wanted to bring up is the question. Matt and I had this, and we dealt with it briefly, but I definitely think this deserves a little more discussion.
Mm.
Obviously, now we've got the new continuity. We've got the movie that's set up. Kirk's captain. He's a little bit younger now, and everyone's on the Enterprise, and we're everything's out there. What happens next? And I think it's interesting to kind of think of what the new continuity, like the changes they've made and, what they could do and that sort of thing.
I mean, the fact that they blew up Vulcan is a huge thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And if they don't deal with that, I'm going to be really pissed off because, I mean, just.
Well, there should be repercussions, but I also don't want to see a whole movie just dealing with, like Vulcan refugees.
They should just go there and just look at the entire movie.
Yeah. To where Vulcan used to be. Yeah. Empty space.
This is so sad.
This is so emotional. I don't want to watch this. No, but...
No.
But, I mean, I was thinking, if you deal with the repercussions of that, there's a lot of Star Trek stories forward that happened on Vulcan or involving Vulcan that wouldn't anymore.
I would like to know where the Vulcans go to fuck now.
Right. When they go through their little ponfar and they have to go have sex or die, then, happens now?
They could do Star Trek too, but I mean, Spock's not going to commit suicide again.
Yeah, that's the thing too. There's no longer that ancient temple that could restore him to life.
Oh shit, I forgot about that.
That was Gavin and I had this whole discussion about that.
Oh fuck, that's a big one.
Time to step to Mount Silean.
I hate to tell you this, but Mount Silea is not there anymore. Oh, fuck it. I'm going to live in your brain for the rest of your life, Bones. Oh, God damn it. So there's that, and there's the Ponfar thing, and there's a lot of, I mean, is Sarek a diplomat anymore? I mean, he's got more important things to worry about now. So, I mean, all the stuff that he might have made happen, as kind of a peacemaker, maybe he's too busy rebuilding a new planet, and that doesn't happen anymore.
And I mean, to the what's left of the Vulcans hook up with the Romulans again? Like, you got old Spock who was trying to unite those two races. Who's to say he's not going to start doing that again?
Yeah, and with him being in the past, he might be able to make inroads, a lot sooner. That's a good point, too. I thought it would be really cool. It happened in the deleted scenes, and I don't know if this is official canon because of it, but Nero was captured by the Klingons and, in that 25-year gap and went to Rurapente, which was a great callback to the prison planet that was in Star Trek VI. And when he escaped, he apparently destroyed like half the Klingon armada. And what I would love in the next movie or in future stuff that takes place is to maybe say the Klingons are no longer a threat, like they were so crippled or whatever that they're kind of out of the game. They're still around, but maybe now the main enemy is somebody else. You know what
finally,
I mean?
Finally, the true evil can be seen.
Right. Or, yeah. Or
like even, the Borg.
Oh. Or somebody good. No, there were a lot of guys they touched on in the original series very briefly. Like
the other Klingons with the dreadlocks on their heads.
Yeah, the
whatever those were.
The Klingmakans or whatever, yeah.
Oh, the
Kazon.
Yeah.
The Oompa Loompa.
Shame on you. Yeah. From Loompa Land. No, but for instance, like, I always thought the Gorn looked really cool. Like,
yeah, that would be cool.
Lizard
I would
guys.
See them again. Now that they don't look like, you know.
Now that you don't have to have a rubber mask, you could do really cool CG. Like,
My old enemy, the mascot.
Right.
They're in that other series now, right? The V thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well. Oh, it's garbage.
Oh, is it? Damn.
Well, but I mean, but the Gorn have like the snouts, so they're a little different. Like, they don't have flat human faces.
Oh, fuck.
Or the Tholians. Yeah, the Tholians could be a cool. Just like a lot of guys that they hinted at that they didn't get to see a lot of. Like, maybe if the Klingons are out of the running now,
yeah,
they could do something else. You know, that would be interesting, and it would still be kind of within the same scope. You'd be dealing with the same guys, but you'd do them a little differently. And, you know, I just, like, that could be cool. I don't know. They're talking about bringing back Khan. That's one possibility. And
really need to not bring back Khan. I mean, I've talked about this before.
I wouldn't mind if they did, but I don't think they should.
No.
Just because it's been done.
Well, they even said that they contemplated at the very end after the credits just showing the Botany Bay floating in space.
Botany Bay?
Oh, no.
Botany no.
Bay. No.
Oh, no.
And that would have been kind of a hint at, like, well, his ship's still out there. We didn't change that much. Like, well,
I would be fine if the Botany Bay just floated for
forever.
Right.
Picard could find it.
It could meet the Kazon.
Yeah. Let him deal with that. You know, from the eugenics wars that happened in the late 1990s. You guys all remember that, don't you?
Oh, yeah. That was terrible.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff they can do where you're not completely getting away from the original stuff, but you can do it differently. Like I say, yeah. You can make... You know, guys that weren't a threat, more of a threat now. You can make, like, what if they made, like you say, made peace with the Romulans early on and they were allies or, you know, whatever. I think there's a lot of possibilities there. And I think those guys really get it. And I think what they've been talking about from what I've read is writing the next two movies at the same time so they can do that Wrath of Khan Search for Spock thing where they set things up in one and pay it off in the next one.
That would be fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they don't have any idea what they're doing yet. And I would love to see expanded universe stuff. Like, I'm amazed that there's no books or comics or whatever that take place in the new status quo. I'm kind of disappointed in that.
I think they're sort of still figuring out what that is. You know?
Yeah.
I can respect that.
I can too. But on the other hand, it's like, if they're just going to do movies, we're going to get 2 hours every 3 years. And it's like, this is so cool and exciting now. I want more.
Well, I get that. But, like, you really need to give them time to set up the new universe, you know?
Yeah. But I want it now.
I know.
Set up and as far as just like writers sitting down and figuring out, okay, what's changed or
what? I mean, just sort of like establishing what the new universe looks like, you know, I think if you take just the one movie and just start shooting stuff off from that, like all this out of continuity, like, you know, expanded universe stuff, then you're limiting, you know, what the writers are doing, going to be doing with the sequels.
But that was never a concern. Like I said, one of my favorite Star Trek books was Federation, which was immediately contradicted by First Contact.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
They don't care. That stuff's not canon. You can write stories in that world and then just, it doesn't, you know, the movies and TV shows trump everything else.
Yeah. But I guess I can see that where it's like the original series, you know, there was a huge run of it there. So you had a lot to kind of get a feel for what the limitations of the universe were, but where the unexplored areas were that you could kind of go and flesh out in a book.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I mean, what else really developed differently? I mean, Kirk's dad died, so that changed him. Obviously, Vulcan's gone, but I mean, what
is his brother's name is Johnny now.
Yeah, instead of Sam. God, I was so mad. No, I just.
You're talking about that guy that he drives past.
Yeah, in the
room?
In the deleted scenes. Yeah, in the deleted scenes, he was the same kid.
Oh, right. I would have no problem whatsoever that with them making Green Chick a reoccurring character.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that Green Chick could be his brother.
If we could just do a whole spinoff with her, I'd be great. Great with that.
TV series?
Chekhov in space.
Green Chekhov.
Watching EP.
But I mean, what else? Like, I guess when Nero showed up, he destroyed a bunch of starships. So those guys.
He introduced Borg technology way before it would ever show up. Like, what do you call it? The ship's got Borg technology on it.
Oh, does it?
Yep.
I did not know that. Oh, that was in that that comic that they did, isn't it?
It's been in a couple of comics, actually.
Countdown? And, yeah.
The Nero mini that followed it.
I
only read Countdown.
I actually thought I hated Nero, and when I've been watching the movie again, it's like, no, he's actually, like, I like his, I don't know what it is, like, his delivery. Like, there's a bit.
Hi, Christopher.
Yeah, there's a bit where Pike is all pissed off, and he's like, this is Christopher Pike of the Enterprise. Who am I speaking to? And he's like, hi, Christopher, I'm Nero. Yeah. I crack up every time I hear that. He's just so evil and badass, but at the same time, he's just kind of a dick.
Like it hasn't happened yet. It has happened!
Yeah. I don't know, and I didn't realize until I watched the bonus features that he's wearing a prosthetic. Like, that's not his head.
Right.
They gave him a new head.
Yeah, but it just looks like they put pointed ears on him and maybe a bald cap or he shaved his head. Like, I didn't realize.
Oh, he's got kind of these, like, V-shaped ridges.
Yeah, they reshaped his face. Like, his nose is a little bit different. And I thought that was cool because I didn't even notice. And I was impressed that they did a lot of little practical effects like that that I think made it better. Yeah. But I'm really just trying to think of what else would be different. I guess obviously now Spock and Uhura are more of a thing.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
That sucks for Scotty, apparently.
Yeah, I guess that was also in 5, right? Where they were allegedly together something. Oh, well.
Well, actually, there was a little hint at that in the original series.
Well, of her with Spock or of her with Scotty?
With Scotty. Just here and there.
Because I remember there being a hint of it with Spock, because when I saw it in the movie, I was like, yeah. They hinted at that in the series. That's right.
Did they?
In the movie, I just didn't get that at all until I think they were like actually kissing.
Yeah, really? I was. Like,
or even they were even after that, and I was like, "What? Oh right, I see."
I don't know. I don't remember. Like, I don't remember being bothered by it. But when it actually happened,
it's a great concept.
Yeah.
I wasn't bothered by it. I just didn't get it.
No, I'm saying when the kiss happened, I think I already knew. Like, I don't think. That was the first time. But the overall concept of them being together, I swear there was something in the original series where, like, the first time she was doing that singing thing you guys were talking about, in one of the early, like,
he had to show up to play his lute.
She's like singing to him, like, kind of to impress him kind of thing. I think there was sort of an undercurrent of, you know, like, he's kind of hot. I want him to like me.
Yeah. It was kind of this weird thing with her too, that she was featured fairly early in the series, you know, doing the singing and doing a lot of other little things.
Right.
Had scenes by herself and then nothing. She just, like, after the first 6-8 episodes or so, she just kind of disappeared into the background a bit, aside from, you know, her duties on the bridge.
I wonder if that was backlash, like, from, like, the racists, like the South saying, we're going to pull the show if you don't take her off.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, I don't know.
Being like, well, if she gets to sing, then I want to sing.
Yeah. And I want to kiss her too. I don't care how you make it happen.
and then I want to deny it 20 or 30 years later.
She's just like, please don't make me kiss Shatner. Please don't make me kiss Shatner.
Well, there was that great. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say he's just going to sing Rocket Man.
That's the only time that Elton John is acceptable to me.
It's going to be a long, long time again to find.
There's a bit in the Shatner roast that they did a couple of years ago on Comedy Central or whatever, where Shatner himself was actually kind of funny. He actually, like, I'll give him credit. I think he's kind of a joke now, but there's a bit at the end where he's kind of responding to all the people that have been roasting him. And he looks at Takei, who's, you know, out of the closet now, and he says, George, for the last time, no, you can't suck my cock. And then he turns to Nichelle Nichols and says, by the way, Nichelle, thank you. So anyway, and you can tell she's in front of all these, like, hardcore mean comedians, and she doesn't want to lose it, but she's not happy about that. She's just kind of like,
I forget when that is. It's just like, I'm William Tiberius fucking Shatner.
Well, he comes out on a horse because he likes horses, apparently. That's why they were in Generations, because, you know, I won't be in it unless I get to ride a horse.
I want to ride my horse.
Yeah. And so he actually rides it out into this, whatever the venue was, and comes up to the stage. But it gives Takei the perfect setup to come up there and say, I've wanted to say this for 40 years. Fuck you and the horse you rode in on. Just so, I mean, it gave those, like, the guys that were left and the guys that showed up, I guess, was just Takei and Nichols. But it really gave them the opportunity to you know, finally speak their piece and say, God, you're an ass.
Yeah, I never nice. Thought I was an asshole.
Yeah.
It came as a complete surprise.
Well, gentlemen, I
just don't like being treated like shit.
I don't get it. What? I'm the star. I don't understand. So I think we're about finished. I think that's about everything, unless you guys have anything else. I think we've touched about as much Shatner as we need to touch.
I believe Nichelle Nichols said that.
But, I mean, have we left anything out, or?
Unless there's some way to work in more green women, I think.
That's going to be your thing now, right? You're going to be the green women guy?
Apparently.
Well, at least you're embracing that. So, and it's a lot better than being the flonk guy. Oh, shit, though. That reminds me. We have questions.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
What?
We have specifically Star Trek-related questions.
Questions we've been saving.
And I hate to say that thinking of flonk made me think of that, but I'm like, flonk questions, fuck. So
flonk is synonymous with
why don't,
all right, so we'll put off the ending for
yeah, well, I'm not gonna end here. I'm just gonna wait for the website.
I'll just open this up and see what's inside. Ah!
Wait, where's Smlown? What's he doing?
I'm watching you right now.
That's your Smlown, really?
Yeah. I'm watching you right now.
I like Slurpee too, Matt.
I like Slurpee too, Matt.
Oh, God.
All right. Let's see. We
loud. How's it go?
I wasn't going to do that tonight. No, he wasn't going to do that.
Right. Different people.
Take
this
for tense.
So we got a series.
Damn microphone.
We got a series of questions from our friend from India, Ashwin, and some of these are Next Gen related and so forth. So I'll just read the ones that deal with the original series.
Excellent.
Well, we had to handle this one. We might as well get it out of the way now. First, since you've got a bunch of people talking about Trek, can we finally get a consensus among the group over who the superior captain of the Enterprise is, Kirk or Picard?
Oh,
let's go. How do you like that, Ashwin?
He reprogrammed the question to so he could win. It's the no-win question.
I'm going to go with Kirk.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Kirk.
Well, now I just want to answer Picard because you guys are jerks. But I don't know. I mean, my sort of weasel answer is that Kirk was the, you know, the 60s hero and Picard was the 90s hero, and they don't, I just can't compare
them.
They're
both great captains in different ways.
Oh, no, Janeway sucks. I mean, you know.
Well, obviously, no one's going to say Janeway.
Well, no. But I mean, they came from such different times, which is why one of the reasons I didn't think the new movie was going to work, because Kirk feels like the 60s to me. He feels like that America in the space race, fuck it, we got to get it done. Let's cut all the corners. Let's cheat. And just heroes like that aren't really seen a lot now. And I was really surprised that works. So maybe it is Kirk, because, I mean, he's endured, like, all this time. I thought he was kind of a relic at this point. But let's see. About the cast of the original series, I know this is a question that can be answered by them, but do you guys think that they ultimately really hated Trek and the fact that all of them got typecast in those roles forever? Even among nerds, I find Trekkies to be unreasonably irritating, so I can imagine the loathing some of the cast must have had for them.
Oh, yeah. I imagine it would be infuriating to be an actor who, you know, you don't want to be, you know, the same character forever. You want to go on and do different things, and people just, oh, say, beam me up, Scotty.
And they may have been one of the first groups. Like, I'm sure there were, you know, like George Reeves ran into that playing Superman, but I bet they were the first sort of ensemble cast really to get saddled with, you know, dance captain, you know, yeah. Like...
I mean, seeing some interviews with them since then, it seems like they, you know, they've all kind of gone through a phase where they're like sick of it and, you know, stop asking me to do this again. But they've kind of, you know.
Well, and then you come around to it and they're like, well, I guess this is the best it's going to get.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or at least that, yeah, it was a pretty great period, even, you know, even if I am sick of people asking me to do the, you know, beat me up, Scotty, again.
And correlating my checkbook with the times that I hated Star Trek and the times that I sucked it up and did Star Trek, I find that...
I find that I really do actually like
Star Trek. Yes, I like it quite a lot.
And I do think they hate Shatner more than they hate Star Trek.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is actually disappointing that, that DeForest Kelly was the first of them to pass, because he actually kind of liked Shatner, and, you know... I would just like to think that the hatred drove James Doohan to the grave. You know, like, goddamn Shatner, God!
Well, it was a combination of that and the Alzheimer's.
Oh,
yeah. Well, she!
I looked into this, or maybe one of you told me. He had Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and, like, one other horrible, like, everything you
Holy
can get.
Crap.
Yeah, everything you can get as an old person where you suffer and lose your mind and lose your facilities. He, like, all of them. All at once. And the poor bastard just...
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So let's see. Oh, Bob, this one's for you.
Oh?
Guess what it's about. What do you guys think the psychological reasoning is behind so many men finding green-skinned women sexually attractive? I didn't know so many men did.
So many?
I only know the one, but...
I figured it was just me at this point, but... don't know.
And that works.
I would like to hear you guys' opinions about why it is that I like green women.
I don't know, because you're a freak.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know you. You don't really seem to have particularly bizarre tastes, so this one kind of hit me from left field. Like, you know, I've known you for a long time, and we usually kind of check out the same women, so I don't know.
No one can explain why your shit you're into.
Yeah, I mean, the one consistent element of this show from the beginning has been weird fetishes, and I don't think we really ask why. We certainly don't judge. It's just like, well, there you go.
My best guess at this point, it was just exposure at an early age.
That could be.
Seeing the sexy women in the Star Trek.
Yeah, I know it kind of
8 or 10.
It kind of came out when we were at the Chicago Con, where you saw a chick dressed up as She-Hulk or something, and you're like, whoa.
Hi there.
I didn't realize. Whoa. What are these funny feelings below the waist?
I'd never known woman up to that point.
And he came over to my room. No, this isn't one of those kind of stories. But he came to my room to pick me up so we could go downstairs. And we were having this kind of, you know, I mean, we're very good friends. We've been very good friends for a long time. We had this sort of heart to heart. And he says, Al, I really like green women a lot. You were so earnest.
This conversation
you were so earnest about it. And I was like, all right. And you're like, no, Al, really. It was like you were coming out.
It's like, Al, I want you to help me kidnap this green woman.
And I was,
a
I mean,
I'm a person who I love like a woman.
Oh, boy. If universes collided and the Adam West Batman show somehow crossed over with the original Star Trek show, how do you think that shit would go down?
That shit would go down awesomely.
I don't think anyone would actually notice.
No. It was definitely
Batman,
a similar
Batman
sensibility.
Would just command the Enterprise. That would be the end of it.
What's this, that, Captain
I would
Kirk
watch the shit out of that.
Caught in a cavernous cave?
And they would find interesting villains in space.
Right.
Hang on.
Like Egghead. And...
Well, it's like I don't know the... God, what was it? Oh, Whom Gods Destroy was an episode I just watched last night, and it took place in kind of space Arkham Asylum, where it was kind of like the space outpost of the criminally insane, and it was this former Starfleet captain, and it was an Andorian and a Tellarite and a green chick,
and the Joker,
right, and the Joker. But no, it really felt like what? Like
with mustache.
The crazy Starfleet captain comes out, and the green chick's hanging onto his arm. And the way they were postured and the way it was shot, it just looked like Joker and Harley. It looked like the inmates had broken out of Arkham, and it really did remind me of that whole thing. I was like, hey, yeah.
We got to take over the Enterprise, Mr. J.
This is one we've already answered. Actually, Gav and I have answered in a little one-off comic that we did. If stand-up comedy existed in the Star Trek universe, how would a comedy routine by Spock begin? We've already covered this, actually, and I'll link to that in the show notes.
20-year people be like this.
And this one, I guess, applies to all...
deal with replicator food.
This one, I guess, applies to all of the series, but I'll ask this again. What episode of each Star Trek show epitomizes that particular series for you and why? So let's use that in this context.
Ooh.
And I would even expand this because maybe not all of us know the series like really well. Expand that out to movies as well. Why not?
Okay. I mean, I would go with Devil in the Dark for the original series.
Oh,
would,
yeah.
That was the Horta?
The Horta, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep, the silicon-based creature.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, it. I mean, there's an interesting mystery going on, but and then, you know, they're scared of this, you know, alien thing, but then they try and figure out what it's all about, and just kind of that... That
kind of sets up the premise of the show.
Yeah, that I mean that them going through the process of figuring out what this creature is and that it's not really there to attack them and they don't need to destroy it and they just need to understand it. Kind of that whole understanding things that are alien.
Right.
I think that kind of epitomizes the message of the original series for me.
Okay. Gav, how about you?
No, I'll do.
I like his.
Yeah.
It was gonna, well, I don't know. I do like piece of the action as well. But it is
Mafia Planet?
The episode, yeah. But I just love it so much just because it's so hilarious.
Sure.
Or you learn to play Fizban.
That is a good pull, my friend.
Nice.
Matt, how about you?
I gotta go with Trouble with Tribbles. It just sums up, you know, sort of where I was like as a kid watching the show.
Sure.
You know, like that was the one I watched the most times. I think I had it on tape or something. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, when I think Star Trek, I think that episode.
Sure. And it's interesting that the two of you kind of went with the more comedic episodes. It's kind of, I like when they do comedy sometimes, like we were saying with Four, I think it can work, mm-hmm. but I tend to prefer the more serious things with bits of comic relief in it. And this is such a stock answer, and I'm sorry, but really, City on the Edge of Forever.
City on the Edge of Forever.
I think that was Gene Roddenberry's best written episode because, yep. You know, what a great writer Gene Roddenberry is. The writer of that episode, Gene Roddenberry, just really summed up what his Gene Roddenberry's show is all about. And
I especially like when they went back in time and tried to stop JFK.
Man, if they'd actually done that story in 1967...
Holy cow.
That would have been awesome.
If they'd done that in 1962, that would have been amazing.
Fucking Kirk stops Kennedy from getting hit by a car.
And then Jackie falls in love with him instead. And
yeah, exactly.
They have to get them back together at the Fish Under the Sea dance.
Yeah, she sprays herself green.
Got to work that in there, yeah. But no, really. And yes, I know who actually wrote City on the Edge of Forever. Ashwin, please stop correcting me. But I refuse to say his name because I think he's a dick. So we're just going to say Gene Roddenberry wrote that episode because he's got...
sued.
He's got... I didn't say his name. Did I say his name? I did not.
I can't tell anymore.
You're going to get so sued.
Now you've made me lose my place again. Now, I think that show really does sum up... like, to me... Kirk, Spock, McCoy is the whole show. Like the other guys, yeah, the movie now is making them a little more relevant, but really they were the best fleshed out characters. That dynamic between the three of them.
That was the only thing missing from the new Star Trek was they didn't have, Bones wasn't in it enough, you know?
Yeah. And
I'm hoping they get to that in the sequel.
I see why they did it that way.
Oh yeah. But I mean, like, you know,
yeah,
it's sort of, it won't feel right until it's the three of them.
Well, and really, the way it's always been represented to me, like I've read, you know, like analysis and all that kind of stuff, is sort of like the id, the ego, and the superego. You have like the guy out there actually doing stuff, and then you have like the one that looks at it in a very, you know, passionate way, and the one that looks at it in a very cold way. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of like the devil and the angel on his shoulder, however you want to look at that metaphor, really. Mm-hmm. Kirk is in the middle, and he's got, you know, the emotion on one side and the logic on the other side, and he's got to be the guy in between. And I've always loved that. And it was really good in that episode because he wanted to save this woman and he wanted to, you know, to be with her. And he knew at the end he had to do the logical thing and Spock had to be there and say, no, you know, let her go. And it's like, oh God, I really enjoyed that. And, that kind of sums up the show for me. So that's about it. That's the only questions we had that addressed this series. So
excellent.
gentlemen, I want to thank you. This was great. This is also probably the longest one we've ever recorded, but
I can't say as I'm shocked by that.
No, and I expect I expect the subsequent Next Gen and DS9 ones will be just as long. But
God, DS9's going to go on forever.
Yeah, you'll never not be recording them.
Thank you, Gav.
I at least want to thank you.
That's why I'm here.
I at least want to thank you for not asking us what's the haps this time, because three times and you're fired.
Forgot about that.
We can edit that back in, right?
No, we certainly cannot. So, you know, not to get too cheesy with the quotes or whatever, but I have been and always shall be, yada, yada, yada. We're going to stop talking now.
The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is published weekly and is available via iTunes or on the web at algar.com. Detailed show notes, related links, and alternate file formats are also available on the web. That website again is Algar, AlGar.com. Follow Matt and Al on Twitter. They are, respectively, at RobotMatt and at Algar. Listener feedback can be sent to podcast@algar.com. An on-air response is guaranteed. All material contained herein is the intellectual property of Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and the featured guest, unless otherwise noted. The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is a trademark of Algar Productions, copyright 2009.
He was a suburban child of the 70s.